Hello, folks.
It was Izzy's pick. It was Izzy's pick, but I stand by it. Welcome to Sports, the podcast that ends with a question mark, but usually starts with a question. But it's Thursday, which means that I'm joined by a guest, a friend of mine that I've met through the industry that I want you guys to know a little bit better. Today, that guest, to me, needs no introduction. You may know him from around the horn. You may have seen him on Highly Questionable. He's been reporting on the NBA for how many years? Many years. For a whole bunch of years. Ladies and gentlemen, today I'm joined by Israel Gutierrez. Hi, Izzy.
Hey, Katie. How are you? It makes me very sort of old when I think about how many years, like, been covering the NBA in some capacity for 21 years.
I mean, it sounds crazier than it looks. Like, I'm looking at you. I always am hesitant to congratulate people on how long they've been working in the industry, because sometimes, as I'm now 34, you hear it as like you've been here for a while, which is like, I don't want it to feel that way, but I do want, like, that is very impressive that for 21 years you've been covering the NBA.
You know what's weird too is like, and I mean, we could do a deep dive into why I feel this way, but I've always, and to this day, I still feel like the kid. Like,
I do too. Is that good or is it bad?
Well, so for me, I don't know. Like, for me early on, like, I was the kid, right? Like, literally my first day at Marlins, as a Marlins beat writer, because I'd gotten the Palm Beach Post job. Right out of school, like, they called me to hire me like a month before I graduated.
That sounds like an out of school job. I'm a reporter at the Palm Beach Post.
Well, interestingly enough, like, at the time, that was, you know, it still is, I guess, because there's only three of them. Like, the top three newspaper in Florida, there was you know, the Miami Herald, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. And to have a job, period, at the time, 1999, going into 2000. But to have a job in your hometown, because it's like close enough to Miami where I grew up and where my parents and family lived, and to have it before I actually graduated was all just amazing. It was
in something that you wanted to do, not in like some boring.
Right. Because I had like friends, buddy Robbie Nieswanger, who may or may not listen to this. Who knows? I got a job in Arkansas. Right.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, that's jobs where like, I just, hopefully you just go there and get out. Right. He's still there. I think.
No way.
I think he's at the same paper. He's moved on from sports, but like, he's still in Arkansas. Like,
and maybe he loves it.
Yeah. And he does. He's got kids and a wife, but that first job like created his life for him.
Yeah.
My first job just brought me back to my hometown, which I was super happy about. But I remember the first day. So I was there for like 3 weeks and they were still looking for a Marlins reporter because Dan Graziano, who is now with us, had gone to the Newark Star-Ledger. And so they'd gone through some resumes and didn't really like anybody. And then they just kind of offered me the Marlins beat job. And I'm like, "What? I've been out of school for like 3 weeks. Are you sure about this?" And I didn't even love baseball. Like, I liked it enough, right? Because I was a Marlins fan in my childhood, having watched them win a World Series, you know, twice or once by this point. And so I'm like, of course. And my first day on the job, Dave O'Brien, who's been in Atlanta for a while now, but he covered the Marlins for the Sentinel, he said, "How old are you?" And I said, 22. And he goes, "Geez, whatever happened to paying your dues?" And I was like, "Right, well, I guess I'm just going to hear this for the rest of my time." Ugh. And so I've always felt like that throughout the early portions. But even as I've like grown to more of like a veteran, or like paid my actual dues, or like got some sort of, you know, track record or respect or whatever, like, I've always just felt like I haven't been that person, or like I'm always the new person on board. And I mean, a lot of that just has to do with my own self-confidence issues and everything else, but it's a really weird feeling and I can't shake it. Like, I do shows with like you and Pablo and Mina, and I still feel like the kid in the group.
Oh, I mean, I look at that as the opposite. I'm like, I do shows with you and I'm like, oh, when Izzy's here, I have to be on my best behavior because he does not have to put up with my BS, because Izzy has been doing this for a long time and is very, very good at doing this in the way that it's meant to be done. And then I come in and I'm like, I don't really do it that way, but I don't really know what I do. And so I always feel like, all right, get your together because you're on with Izzy tomorrow. So I don't know if that helps the way you feel or provides any context, but to me, you're the guy that I'm like, oh goodness, okay, don't joke around too much because this is somebody's job that you're just at goofing
that's
off
so
all
crazy
the time.
That I don't even believe you. Like,
why?
I think it's absolutely insane to think about, because I mean, that's exactly what I think. Like, well, HQ in particular, like back when Dan was on, I was like, Jesus, like I have to live up to like to be sitting next to Dan. So I feel I have to have something in there, some sort of nugget, some sort of like thing that maybe even Dan didn't think about. Think about that, Katie. Like, you
sit there
and you try to come up with something that Dan, who like usually shocks the world with everything unique that he thinks about, right? Like, let me try to think of something he wouldn't have thought about. Like, that's the worst possible way to do your job. Like,
that is, that's how I feel when we do a race topic and I'm on with Bomani. I'm like, what do you want me to add to this conversation? It's the hardest thing about HQ is when you get these topics where you're like, well, I'm on with somebody who knows much more than I do about this. What am I possibly going to add? And it's the thing I've leaned into in this last year of like, well, I'm just going to say what my perspective is. And maybe that will help somebody get closer to understanding somebody else's perspective. All I can add is what I have in my cupboard. It's not much. It's rather bare, but maybe this spice brought out something that nobody noticed before.
Well, that's the whole point to me, I think, is that like, depending on how much you know when you listen to us, right? So let's just say it's me, you, and Bomani. Like, if I'm a listener or a viewer, like, I know I'm going to want to hear what Bomani has to say because I know it's ridiculously well-informed. I know it's going to be presented well. And there's probably going to be at least one or two historical nuggets that I didn't know when I started listening to it. But I never really feel like I'm being, you know, spoken down to or like prophesizing or anything like that. So I know what I'm going to get there. And so if I look to you as a viewer or to me, I still don't want to be talked down to. I don't want to be told what to do. I just want your perspective. I just want a little bit to where I don't have to get defensive. I can just soak something in. And even if it's not the same amount of detail and the same amount of richness as something that Bo will give you, it just, like you said, it could mean something different to a different person. And whatever they can sort of download and take in and absorb without, you know, getting defensive, without creating that filter where they're only going to take in things that they want to take in, or, you know, then that's all that really matters. Like, I think these days everybody's expected to have such a strong take that when you just have something that sort of, and I don't want to use this stupidly, but I do this a lot. Like, I think to myself, like, I'm dumbing things down or at least just simplifying it for the moment, because a lot of people maybe are skipping steps and not realizing that, hey, this is what this is about, not all this crazy talk. And so I just think that there's always a value to that. And just the more genuine you are, the more, like, I used to assume that things that I knew or happened to me that, like, were just common knowledge, and sometimes it's not. And so, like, I use Hubie Brown as an example, as a sports example for what I'm talking about, just in general conversations, like we're talking about, whether it be race or anything serious, because now that seems like it's all we do. I use Hubie Brown as an example because Hubie somehow finds a way to explain the sport like you're talking to a five-year-old, while not insulting, you know, the 50-year NBA veteran, and then still giving that person a little something that maybe they didn't know, and does it all, you know, concisely without taking over a broadcast. And so if you just offer this little nugget, and, you know, this endless, the tweets or responses that I've gotten, just like, you know what, I didn't really think about it that way. Thanks for, you know, for saying that or whatever. And
isn't that the best?
It's the most simplest.
That's my favorite tweet.
Or thoughts. Absolutely.
Yeah, my favorite tweet is hearing somebody like quote something back to me I said that to me was just like, meh, and that they were like, that's the words that I've been looking for to put to the feeling that I've had. And you're like, whoa, I'm so glad I could have given that to you. Because when you have that feeling, when you're a consumer of media and you see somebody say something that you're like, yes, you know what that feels like. So to give that back to people feels awesome. And I imagine you have felt that the reward of this job, other than, you know, the other rewards, monetary and otherwise, more than a lot of other people. I mean, I don't want to spend this whole podcast talking about you as a gay icon, but you are a person of note who came out publicly. And that to me is a fascinating story, because to hear you say, well, about, you know, when you were, how you feel like a kid, you were like, some of this is just my self-confidence issues. To me, I can't imagine the confidence it must take to take a step like that. And I kind of just want to, not to give you the journalist, talk a little bit about that, but yeah. I do just want to hear your perspective and what you learned about yourself in that, what I imagine was a very emotional and very intense time of your life.
It is, fortunately and unfortunately, something I like have to examine over and over again, or am asked to examine over and over again. And I say fortunately because like I'm still going through it. I'm still, you know, working through whatever it is, learning this part of my life, because, you know, for 31 years, that's when I came out to friends and family, when I was 31 years old, but not to the, like, the general public, and was living my everyday life as an out gay person. Not until I was, what year was that? That was 2015. I was 38. And damn. So, yeah, so it was, so I'm still sort of, you know, going through that. And like, even now, like, this is mind blowing to just sort of give a quick summary, but I, at 31, met somebody, was, and that would be the only person I had dated ever, ended up, you know, living with that person, getting married to that person, divorcing that person, and that person has now died. And damn. So this is a whole like life in 8, 9, 12 years. Like,
and not for nothing, while you're in the public eye, you're not going through this quietly in your own house at your own pace.
Right. It was really weird. I've told the story a couple of times, but just to show you like where I was in terms of like what a value I provided, or what like things should mean to me. That was when my ex and I like broke up. It was basically a day where I caught him cheating on me, found him cheating on me. I shouldn't say caught him like in the act, but just found proof that I was being cheated on. And, you know, we broke up and he tried to commit suicide like immediately. The same
day. God, is he?
Yeah. And so the next day, like literally having gone through an insane amount of things, like literally saved his life by calling his friends to pick him up, saved his life again because his friends left him in a car and he probably would have asphyxiated if I didn't get there at the time. And then 2 hours later, I'm having this debate with myself because I'm supposed to be getting on a plane to Chicago, I believe it was, or Minneapolis, for a game. And I'm asking myself,
oh my God,
do you think they're going to think that I'm just some sort of drama-filled human?
No, Izzy. Is this enough for me to ask for a day off? Oh, my God.
Like, you know, in my mind, it's like, oh, he's alive. You're okay. Okay, get your ass to wherever you need to get to. And, you know, when I called in, and obviously they said it was okay. But, like, that's just where I was at the time. And, yeah, and that was... that was after it coming out, you know, that was after I'd been married and everything. And so like, you would think that I'd had this, you know, overwhelming, you know, confidence and just like, I'd learned from it, but it's been a lot. I never really know where to start. But I would say like in terms of just the job, the career, from literally one day to the next, nothing changed. Like, you know, it was weird that Around the Horn had a bunch of my wedding pictures up and, you know, they celebrated that. And it was, you know, it was weird that, you know, I'd run into people in public and they would thank me for all these things that I've done. And I'm like, I maybe spent like 30 seconds talking about, you know, a subject on TV. Like, I'm not sure what I've done, but, you know, you're welcome, I guess. And so the job itself, I think, you know, outside of the random moron who'll, you know, tweet something out to you or chase you down on Instagram because, I don't know, they have their own insecurities and want to say bad things to you.
I just feel like hacks at this point of like, we're still doing this. You're still doing this. Get a life.
outside of that, like there is no real, like overwhelmingly negative or any real negative response to the work side. What happened to me is just that realization that work was, a tool, if you will, you know, a way to do or be something better, because, like I never wanted to be on ESPN. This is probably not something good to say less than a year into
contract. No, it's honest.
But I never wanted to be on ESPN.
You can like, want now, but not have wanted when you first started.
Well, I should probably rephrase that. It's not that I didn't want. It was just like, and maybe it was one of those self-confidence things. I was like, well, that's never going to be
for me. You didn't picture it. Yeah, it wasn't in your life plan.
And so I'm like, all right, I can be this sort of semi-anonymous writer who is, you know, only known in my hometown, really, but not really nationally or anything like that, and just be successful there. But yeah, I got to sort of ESPN, and it was just like, wow, this is awesome. Like, this is other people sort of validating, you know, me and my career and everything that I've done before that, and you know, giving me just some good feelings of just confident feelings of just like, hey, I'm in this group of
affirmation. Your reality was confirmed, or whatever they say.
Right. But I don't like, it was never something where if you were to ask me, hey, all things being equal, you know, salary, but whatever, longevity, what would you rather do? I'd probably rather write. You know, I think it gives you a lot more freedom in terms of what it is that you want to get across. Like, I've never been somebody who thought anybody should care about me. Right. So it's not about me. I just want to talk about the subject, the player, the person, the trend, whatever. And so I feel like, I feel like I just recognize that it is such an important part of how people see me, right? Because if there is a young, you know, gay or closeted person who is struggling with things, they don't look at me because I'm just a gay person. They look at me because I'm a gay person in sports media, and it's just a rarity there. And that's why, you know, a gay kid who grows up loving sports is just like, man, they're not going to look at me if I suck, right? They're like, oh man, what a disappointment. Like, this guy happens to be the guy who represents us. And so, so it mattered more that I, you know, not necessarily am good at my job, but just liked it and put effort into it and represented myself properly. But the more fulfilling stuff is the other stuff is, you know, not just being able to every once in a while get a message across that people are forced to think about, not just like normalizing this, because like I talk about my partner all the time. I'm an open book. Like, I did a whole podcast basically blow for blow about my whole relationship. And after David, my ex, died, and you know, it doesn't matter to me what people know. And so that to me has become the most important thing, is to be sort of a vessel, a vehicle, something for people to connect with, something for, like, if I want them to feel like they are sort of living vicariously through me, because I am just one of, you know, like LeBron likes to say, just a kid from Akron. Like, I'm just doing this. And like, if you guys respect me, great. But, you know, if you want to follow along, this is how I'm going through it. Like, this is how I'm going about it. I just did a Fan Levitard podcast. That's the name of the podcast. I was drinking a glass of wine. It was, I think, my second is when I started the podcast. I was playing playing an online poker tournament at the same time.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure I cried twice in
the... Oh, good. You know what? Good.
No intention of doing that going into it. None. But it's just like, if anybody, you know, wants to sort of be a part of this while I'm going through it, cool. Because like, I'm pretty sure, especially now that I can, like, everything is a lot more relatable to me, just in terms of relationships and sort of like love songs, in terms of what movies and what people go through, like, I get a lot more now. And so just, even though I still feel like the kid in terms of like professionally in media, I feel a lot more veteran when it just comes to life.
Yeah. And the game slows down, as they say.
Exactly. It's all just starting to merge.
Yeah. It's like,
together. And exactly. So I think it's the best part coming up for me in terms of just understanding things while you're going through it. And, you know, hopefully people will still want me around and I can be employed and stuff.
It's like a good way to process stuff is to experience it as you're experiencing it and not worry about how it looks when you're experiencing it. One of the things that stood out to me when you came out, and I, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we had met yet, because I wasn't at ESPN yet, but I had either maybe met you at like an event or something. I knew of you, obviously, and respected you. And I remember reading, was it a blog post?
But yeah, am I coming
that you
out?
Came out in? Yeah. I remember reading that, and the thing that stood out to me was you saying and reassuring almost the reader that, like, if you like me so far, Everything else about me has been authentic. It's just been this one thing I haven't felt comfortable being. So please don't think finding this out about me is that like everything you know about me is a lie. And that stood out to me so much because I think it's the thing that like I struggle with is like making sure people know like, look, I'm just a person and this is the person that I am. And like, similar to what you were saying when you got your first job, my first job in sports media was on a television show with Regis for Fox Sports. And when they asked me to do it, I was like, do you want me to do it? Like, I don't think I'm qualified to do this, but if you're going to let me do it, I'd love to. And I remember feeling the pressure of pretending I knew more than I knew. And I remember how freeing it was to like stop pretending and just say, I don't know, but here's what I think and help me if I need to know more information. And I feel like I could almost hear in your writing that unburdening of like, I have been me. It's so to hear that you were that, not that old as in 31 is really old. And then coming up publicly, you said, I think 38, 37. That's a long period of your life to have felt like a phony. And I just wonder how you cope with that and how you release that because you weren't a phony. You right. just were, I think you said something like you couldn't have acknowledged it back when you probably did know. You said you probably knew when you were younger, but you couldn't look at it yet because it would break you. And it's like self-care for you to have, you needed to wait until you were ready to acknowledge it. But I also know that must have caused this like inner torment for you.
Well, this is something I actually think it can sort of cross over into also a race conversation, just I think, or the race conversation is like, I was fortunate that, and this is the phrase I'm talking about, I could pass. And so I didn't have to address it. Like I took that exit ramp and that was something where I was just like, all right, I'm not faking this. I'm not putting on a voice. I'm not faking interest in sports. Like, this is me. And if, you know, if people aren't going to believe that, that this is, you know, that if people just are going to assume that I'm straight, then I'm just going to let them assume it. And so what I think the people that knew me already told me was like, well, you don't, you know, nothing's changed about you. We always thought you were genuine. So you're good there, but it was basically a plea. Like, you're right. It was, hey, like, just in case you don't know, like, this isn't something, like, me coming out is not me changing. And the craziest part about that is, and this is the things that I'm talking about, Katie, where it's like you assume people know things, right? So my aunt has known me my entire life, okay? She's my mom's younger sister, and I have super close family. Like, I consider my aunts on my mom's side, like, you know, other mothers. And so when I came out to them, I'd already talked to my two of my three sisters. And mind you, by the way, grew up in a house with three sisters, a mom and my dad who slept all day and worked all night. Like, how did I not, you know, like have a bunch of like feminine tendencies? I don't even know, but, you know, I love those ladies. But yeah, where was I going? I don't know why I went to that.
You were talking about how when you told your aunt, assuming that
right.
people know.
So I told my two sisters, and then so now I'm telling my mom, my aunt, and another one of my third sister. And so my aunt just like, she screams out, she goes, gay. And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, but, and this is legit verbatim, she goes, but you're still going to be you, right?
Oh my God.
Because
no,
I like you like
not.
This. And I'm like, oh my God. I was like, wow. Like, you really know you've been around me my whole life. Like, yes, I'm still going to be me. I'm not telling you anything other than, you know, my sexual interests, which frankly.
Which is weird to have to tell your aunt. Exactly. And I'm not saying that. I worry that if I say that as a straight person, that I sound rude, but I do empathize with this, like, I don't ever talk about sex.
Yeah.
Mainly because in a male dominated industry, blah, 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 all that trope stuff, it's like people want me to. And I'm like, stop. So, in order to be comfortable online, forward facing, I have to kind of remove that part of it because I'm like, I don't want people to get the wrong idea and think that they're invited to that part of my life.
Right.
And I wonder for people in these, the big, you know, hoopla around public coming out, half of it that makes me uncomfortable on your behalf is that, like, what if you just don't want to talk to me about the kinds of people you like to have sex with? You shouldn't have to.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you, like, whenever we break it down like that, but it just becomes so much of a, hey, I am this person, you don't like me for some reason, or you might be predisposed not to like me. You should probably just go ahead and like listen or open up and like at least consider why you don't like me. And it just becomes that to me. It's just like, I take very much pride in being a Hispanic male. Like if there was a lot of, you know, issues or open racist issues going on in my world, you know, when it came to Hispanic people, I would be, you know, I would brush up on my Spanish and I'd be fighting with my people, you know, wherever. But in this scenario, like it's become such an important part. Like it's who I am. It's part of who I am. And, you know, F you, if you're going to force me to just like push it down and not, you know, discuss things, you know, because if you think about how regularly and how easily, I mean, you do this, like people throw out sort of relationship analogies or, you know, mention their significant other or that, like, it's so casual when people do it, yeah, when they're heterosexual, but like, I literally have like dodged that my whole life, like a slalom course out there. Like, nope, can't talk about this. Let's move this sec, you know,
because you know that no matter what you say, will be reduced to the fact that you said, did he say when two guys, and it's blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, he's just speaking where he's coming from. And you're focusing on the window dressing instead of hearing his point.
Right.
Like to me, that's what, you know, knowing somebody's identity, like finding out somebody's gay for me is like, thank you for letting, I now can understand you better. Now you can use analogies with me that I can use your, who you are to understand your perspective so that I can get closer to your perspective, see it your way and see how that influences or should influence my thoughts on the issue going forward. It's like just identifying, hey, I'm coming from over here. And you're like, oh, okay, now that I know where you're coming from, I can tell you where I'm coming from. Yep. And that's how we figure out where the directions to where we need to get to. So that for me is why like authenticity is my only like tenet that I have to hold on to, is that like, because if I'm out here lying, then I'm just being flippant with people's attention. You know, once you have people's attention.
You either have to go full in on the lie and create
would eat me up. It would make me feel physically ill, I think, because I feel guilty even when I'm trying my absolute best all the time. I think it's probably the Catholicism in my childhood.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There was some of that in mine too. But fortunately I went to church, mostly Spanish speaking church. So I could understand about like only 70% of what was said.
Oh, that's good. So it didn't really sink in.
But yeah. I want to take it back to your initial question where it's just like, you know, how's it dealing with all that? Part of what becomes, I think, an issue for some people, or part of why I'm probably sure, you know, nobody's really claimed this lane, so to speak. Like, that is so rude for me to say, but like, you know, people like Elsie Granderson, you know, there are plenty of out gay sports media folks, there it is again. But you know, the ones that, like, if LZ is talking about a political issue that has to do with LGBTQ rights or anything like that, it's usually, you know, on CNN or on a news network, whereas I'm, you know, staying here and doing this sports thing. And it gets really draining at times. And I understand why people don't want to just sort of stay in this lane and just have, you know, fight all the blowback and everything else. But it's not even that. A lot of it is just like mentally like tough, like to have to not just discuss this all the time, but I also feel like a responsibility at all times, like at all times. And I shouldn't have to. That's exactly a great question. I don't know. I think it's just to the general public, anybody who had been experiencing anything that I experienced. I've always been that like you first, you know, giver type. And so that just sort of comes along with the territory when it comes to being somebody of potential influence in this department. You know, I see a lot of things that affect me way more now than they would have before. Like a lot of these, you know, transgender bills that are being, you know, written and passed all across the country, not just in sports, but when it comes to, you know, medical care too, like all that stuff like is so sickening in its like bigotry and just the depth of which we want to like hate and create problems that aren't there.
Right.
Just so we can set this tone of bigotry and hate and exclusion. Like, all that stuff is just, I just want to do something about it all the time. But even for me to do that, like, we're talking layers upon layers upon layers just to get to. All I can do is talk about it maybe on a podcast or a radio show somewhere that would have to be listened to by the right people. And then, you know, I could just go straight into politics and try to make, you know, a contribution there. But we're talking, what, I'm 44 at the end of this month. Like, I don't know if that can happen so quickly. Right. It makes me want to do more and more. And like, I've been working on a project without getting into too many details. It just kind of put on pause for a while. And that while has just become longer and longer. And it's just like, I'm constantly feeling like I'm not doing enough.
Yeah.
And my answer isn't, hey, let me go talk to ESPN about doing a feature on NBA guy. It's, I want to do something so much more impactful or so much more influential, but like more direct. And so it's a tough balance, right? And then to make it all, like, to remember and like do all the personal stuff on top of it, and have to talk about that a lot. Like, I sort of danced around, you know, my ex, and I sort of gave you the summary in a little package, but like, you know, forcing, like, that just, he just passed away in August. Like, it hasn't even been a year yet.
Oh, man.
And it's just like, it's just a lot to process, and it's just a lot. And so it's something new, you know.
Also a pandemic. You haven't even mentioned that we went through a global pandemic. Like, you've got a lot of pressures and struggles on your plate at the moment. And that's kind of the thing about this pandemic. I mean, there was a lot of evil in it, death and all the things that we've gotten into, and we don't need to rehash right now. But the thing that it did for most people, other than essential workers, is it halted you in one way or another. I know people worked through it. I know people adapted, but it halted the part of you that I think a lot of us use to avoid having to deal with the stuff that we're not ready to deal with yet. And I feel like this also came up in your blog post, was that like, if you were focused on work and you were doing your job well and you were being authentic in every other way, then this thing, you get to it when you got to it, but you didn't have to get to it because you're busy or working. And the pandemic, I think, was this wall we all kind of ran into. And at first, you know, you've got a couple people pushing against it that are like, no. And it took them a little bit longer, but I think everybody eventually kind of settled into this moment of like, all right, I got a clean house, don't I? And like, that's a lot to sit in alone. And it like isolated a lot of people. I'm also using the words a lot of people to basically describe, it's me. It's like, this happened to me. I was running and running and running. I hit a brick wall and now I'm sort of just sitting.
It just made you recognize, like, if it's just you or you and somebody else. And in my case, like, I had Anthony throughout a pandemic and everything else, but it's just like, if you need to recognize what it is that makes you happy, and because you don't have the distraction, you can't just go out and pick up and go to the bar and, you know, have a couple and then just think about it the next day, what you have to address, because you're literally sitting there. And if you can't find the right thing on Netflix right away, like, you're wondering, like, why am I, like, what is this feeling? Am I happy? Am I bored? Do I hate myself? Do I just have energy? I don't know.
Do I think I'm the best person in the world? Or do I think I absolutely suck at my job and I'm a fraud? Or am I going to bounce between these two things for the rest of the day?
Get out of here with that. Like, when I used to, like, so let's just go with a game. I used to do an NBA game or whatever. And like, after the game, you know, the broadcast crew would go for a, you know, at the hotel lobby bar, have a drink, like, unwind, you know, talk about the game, not sit in your hotel room, look at Twitter and be like, damn it, I knew I messed this up. Or like, after a show where you're just like, nobody cares. Nobody cares if you, you know, did one thing wrong or said, and you're just like, you're stewing in it. And there's like, there's nothing to distract you. So you just have, like, I got off Twitter. I would say permanently, like, I'm probably going to be permanent about it. I think right now I just kind of deleted the app, but still kept my handle before
that's
I actually deactivated
that,
it.
That deserves a pat on the back. You did it. I couldn't do that.
I deactivated it actually for like 2 months. And when I got back to it recently, it's just like, it wasn't even people interacting with me, just watching the way people interact with each other. And it's just like, man, it's just overwhelmingly negative. And it's just, it's a bad place. It puts me in a bad place. Like, I was talking to my trainer. I always feel bad when I call my trainer, because he's like
also your friend.
Yeah. But I was talking to him at the gym. I was just like, do you ever notice the days where I come in and I'm just like bitching about something versus the days that I'm not? He's like, yeah, of course I do. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's because of Twitter. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that that's where it all started.
And so, I had an ex tell me once that he was like, you know, your mood changes and you start snapping at me when you check that app. He's like, it's Twitter. And I remember at the time being like, you're a dick. No, it isn't Twitter. Shut up. And he was like, really? Because that you just confirmed exactly what I said. You're being very aggressive with me for no reason.
Just try to find different ways to think and not be like, oh wow, did I please everybody 100%? And
you're never going to.
So you take that thought out of your head, and it's crazy how much more free space there is in there.
I feel like you said something in there that sparked a memory, and then I lost it. Oh, it was when you were talking about how you used to be able to just go do the game and you wouldn't know if anybody hated what you said. I was listening to this podcast. It's called You're Wrong About. It's very good, but it's one of those things I just like do in my personal free time. So I don't mean to shout them out in any way that is anything other than I enjoy listening to this podcast. But anyway, it was about cancel culture, which everything is now because we have to, because it's this thing we're all talking about and obsessing about. But they were saying that not only did it used to be that you, if you disliked something, you could, you know, write a letter to somebody and maybe the person who even said the thing would see it. Maybe they wouldn't. Now, also, you never knew if other people were writing letters too. You never knew if 10 other people had the same opinion as you and were writing into the station. And now one person can have that opinion and then another person can feel emboldened to take it a little further because they thought that too, but now they've got to differentiate how their opinion's still worth sharing. So it's a little bit more intense. And then another person's like, well, I didn't even think that, but I think this person sucks for this reason. And it kind of builds into this snowball of people just kind of commiserating over a public figure, but in a public place. And so then, you know, you log in and you see three people. For me, the bar is three people. If three people make the same criticism, then I'm like, okay, I have to take this a little bit seriously. It used to be that one could trigger me and I'd be like, that's not true. Or like, oh my God, they're right. I suck. Now I'm at like, if three people in a row were like, you did this and it was this type of bad, I'd be like, oh shoot, I guess I should probably listen. But it also
depends on the subject too. Cause I got one response to Naomi Osaka discussion and I could understand how maybe she heard what she heard, but it wasn't like close to what I said. In fact, it was the opposite. And so I like DM'd because that's my move. I don't try to do anything public and basically said, yeah, pretty much the opposite. You know, I just wanted to make this clear because there are some subjects where I just don't want people thinking, I don't care if it's one person. I don't want them thinking that that's how I think.
Sure, like, I get that.
I feel entitled that she needed to tell me that she was going through depression. No, I'm saying it's better for her, just image-wise, for her to be transparent and say, this is what I'm going through, compared to what her sister put out there and compared to what most people were already thinking that she was minded. Those are totally different things. And so I don't want anybody thinking I'm just sort of jackass being like, you know, like these old school columnists or radio show guys. So those I'll probably try to respond to, but again, I'll just go more individual.
That to me makes perfect sense. I've always said that like you shouldn't get defensive about stuff that you don't, the things you get defensive about should be the parts of you you're trying to protect. Mm-hmm. Of like, if somebody tells me that I'm flippant about mental health, I'm going to listen to what they have to say because it actually really matters to me that I'm not. And then if they continue to double down on an opinion that I'm problematic, I'm going to get defensive of myself because I work hard to not be. And I'm very open to being told that I messed up. That's something that I've worked really, really hard on because it used to make me crumble into a tiny little ball and hate myself. Yep. And now I'm like, look, take criticism because it's somebody helping you become a better version of yourself. They may not do it well. A lot of people are very rough with it. A lot of people don't have good bedside manner, especially on Twitter. But it's valuable information and feedback when professionally I haven't received much of that for a couple years because once you're on air talent, nobody wants to tell you, hey, that kind of sucked. They say it behind your back and then you just don't get a job. And you're like, okay, what don't you like about me? I'm confused. So like Twitter for me has now become this place where like, I'm open to hearing feedback, but don't attack me. I'm going to still stand up for myself if you go a little bit too far.
Yeah. The thing about, and this is probably the conversation that made me just go over the top and say, I'm probably going to get rid of it for good, is just like, you know, we have a horrible governor here in Florida and he signed this, you know, transgender bill, not allowing, you know, transgender kids to participate in sports on June 1st, the first day of Pride Month, with his little daughter there handing him the pen, a daughter who is not of age to come up with her own opinion on the matter. And so clearly he is, you know, not only spreading hate, but teaching it. And so, you know, I just tweeted out just a despicable human being, and that's what he is to me. And then it became sort of a transgender athlete debate. And what I got to realizing is that, like, the messaging from those who are trying to pass these bills is working great, because the messaging is, hey, you don't want boys playing in girls' sports, right? Okay, here, then that's what we're passing here. When what they're doing is creating a problem that's not there, and therefore, you know, making these, you know, young people feel absolutely terrible about themselves, giving and taking away an option that maybe, you know, 5% of them were going to, you know, take in terms of playing sports. And so the conversation becomes, hey, you're wrong here. This is pretty simple. And so when trying to explain to them that you are having this conversation over here, it's just like a magic trick. They're making you have this conversation over here. This is the real truth. And so
it's
when
the
I tell them,
thing.
Yeah, of course. And so when I, this is one gentleman, a coach, he's of course a coach of men, of boys, not of girls, saying, oh, this is clear as day. Yada, yada. And so, you know, I tried to tell him that you're looking at the wrong problem, that it's not a problem. They're creating it out of thin air just to have folks like you believe it and then just, you know, believe that it's normal and that it's not bigotry and that you're not writing basically bigotry into our law books. And then he goes, did you just people like you, me? And I'm like, well, yeah, basically. But then they just get defensive about it.
But what does that feel like? Because you just people like you trans people. So I don't understand how you can.
I didn't even go that far with him. I didn't even go that far with him. All I tried to tell him was that this is a different conversation. And he goes, no, this is true. I'm sorry. You're just, and I'm just like, you know what? You are a coach. Like you're, and probably a teacher. You are supposed to be leading and helping young men and maybe even women grow in this world and learn things. And you're the picture of stubbornness. Like if I were to print out this conversation, it would just be a guy thinking he's so enlightened and being like, oh, this media moron is trying to start a fight with me. And I'm not trying to start anything.
No, you're trying to inform him on something that it appears he's not informed on, that you think you have a perspective that would help him, a person in power, understand what his power means and how he wields it.
And then he puts up a brick wall and doesn't want to hear a thing.
Ugh.
And so that's the part that it's just like, what's the point? Like, what's the point of being on here? Like, I have to put up with, I literally got anxious when I opened the app up for the first time in 2 months.
And also knowing, like, there's the people you can feel that are smiling while they're texting you angrily or tweeting at you angrily. And it's just like, why is this bringing you joy? Like, you log in for this and I log in and hope I don't experience this. That's how we're different. There's too many people who are on there that are like, I want to fight. And there's people that want to fight for something they believe in, but then there's people who just want to fight. And they just want it. It's just so frustrating to go on like the micro level of that story is you're seeing this upswing of interest in women's sports. And, you know, thank you to female athletes. Thank you to the WNBA. Thanks to the women's national team. And now suddenly a bunch of people who were never interested in women's sports before are like, we've got to keep trans kids out of sports for our girls. And it's right. Like, you don't care about girls playing sports. You really, really haven't.
This is the messaging that I'm saying. And so I told this gentleman, I said, yes, people like you are people who just fall for the messaging without actually understanding what's going on. And he was like, you think I believe what I believe in because of messaging? And my thought was, spoken about it before?
Yeah.
Have you ever once in your life said, man, we got to get these transgender girls out of these, you know, girls teams in high school because it's becoming a problem? No. The second it is brought up to you and their message is mentioned to you, you're like, oh, yep, that's right. And I'm going to support it. And I'm going to echo that. That's exactly falling for the messaging.
Yeah. And I can't imagine that. I can't imagine looking at a story that big that affects that many people, that has that many emotions and personal identities tied up in it, and just going, yeah, I'm on this side and I'm going to speak really loudly about it. Like, I know there's a lot of issues related to trans issues that I need to get more educated on. That's why I don't spend a ton of time speaking on it as if I know what I'm talking about. But I am watching people have the conversation, and I do know that I'm like, well, that seems suspect, and that seems suspect. Of just like, why are we talking about, why are you using girls' sports as like the, we must save this beacon of hope that we've never cared about and hate in any other context.
You remember the bathroom bill in North Carolina? Like, this is what an extension of that was. Like, they, you know, I say that they, but you know what I'm talking about. We're trying to say, okay, this is something America could get on board with. You go to the bathroom that you're supposed to go down, but then when it got blowback, it's like, whoa, we didn't expect this. Now let's go with this route. Hey, girls and girls' teams, and let's protect our little girls. They're in danger. They're in danger, Katie. They're not in danger. The AP did a story about this, okay? And it talked to, I want to say, like 30-some of the sponsors, at least 20 of the sponsors of these bills across the state, and like barely any of them could even come up with one example of an issue in their entire state of this particular thing, where you've got transgender girls trying to play in sports and it becomes a problem. Like, a couple of them, several of them couldn't think of a single issue in their state, and here they are, you know, vehemently saying,
this is an epidemic.
It's a joke.
It's not.
And people are falling for it, and that's what I'm saying. It's just like you feel this like overwhelming responsibility to shout from the rooftops, hey, like, what is happening here is terrible and everybody needs to recognize it. But you get this, you know, apathy from one side, you get this blowback from the other side, you get this, you know, the dummies who believe that they know more than you do, who are just, you know, just proving themselves, proving
the Dunning-Kruger effect,
what they are. And it's just, it can be a lot. And it's just, there are times where it's just like the mental health thing, like, I get it more now than I ever have. I used to, you know, growing up, I was like, I toughed it out. Like, I ignored a third of my entire, you know, life. And
yes,
what's wrong with that? Like, whatever.
Like, and you guys all need to suck it up. I really did. I did, right, for a long time.
But where it's come out my entire life is like playing sports. I get angry as like way too angry for somebody who shouldn't be good at it. Right. Like, my first time golfing, let me throw my clubs because, you know, I didn't, you know, hit an 8-iron perfectly. Like, get the hell out of here.
Like, of course you didn't.
It's manifested in, you know, some bad, but it's just, it shouldn't have. And so that's the point. You shouldn't have to go through all that stuff. But I get it more so now than ever. And I'm glad that people are talking about it earlier, because they don't have to wait until they're in their 40s to be like, oh, that's what that feels like. Or that's like the close to depression feeling, or, you know, that's like anxiety and all that stuff. Like, probably wouldn't know what it was if I was experiencing it before, but now I absolutely do.
I feel like that's happened to a lot of people this year. A lot of people have realized that whatever cute word they've used for it their whole life, there's a feeling that is anxiety, and that can tend to be chronic and or not entirely tied to things that are really happening in your life. It's just like this constant, like, did I leave the oven on? And you're like, no, you didn't leave the oven on. You don't even use your oven. Why would you think that you left your oven on? Just this constant, like, oh no, I forgot to do something very important and my life is going to end if I don't do it. And it's just like, I think we've all been trying to take a collective breath over the last year. And of course it was a year when a ton of things happened and everything feels like it's, you know, coming to a fever pitch. And I'm with you on the thing you were saying before about how you just feel like there's so many things you want to do and you want to do it the best possible way. And so that ends up leading to like, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wait and do this big thing that I still can't quite picture what it is yet, but I know I have it and I'm going to do it.
That's where the pressure comes in. Like, it's just like, man, you know, you don't want to, like, it's okay to chip away at it. It's okay to, you know, trial and error it. It's okay to like get something wrong. And so, but that's where, like, that's that major hesitation. That's that same, you know, same reason I didn't come out till it, you know, till 2 weeks before my wedding. That were probably because
I mean, that sounds on its face wild, isn't it? It's like, if I waited till 2 weeks before I got married to be like, hey, I like dudes. Yeah, you're about to marry one, of course. It seems, it's fascinating to me.
But it's so like, it's okay to sort of chip away and like do it a little bit differently or not, you know, have it all figured out at once. And it's just kind of like the same thing with everything. It's like when we shine a light on something that's going wrong in the world, it's not like, hey, let's fix it all at once. It does have to be chipped away. It does have to be slow. And we do have to be, you know, vigilant about it, but it's going to have to be slow. And I think that's the other part of it, is when you have so much more time on your own where things aren't necessarily collaborative. And if they are collaborative, it's through Zoom and you're not really sure if half the people are paying attention on there. You're in your own head a lot. And listen, I've spent my whole effing life in my own head. It's mm-hmm. a terrible place to be. And so I need some like collaborative juices to really make me feel good about something, or to make me want to break through the wall. And, you know, something like giving me a deadline, basically. Like,
yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm the same way.
It's been missing, and it's been weird lately.
Like, I'm an introvert as much as one can be on television. I'm an introvert in that, like, that's how I recharge, is by retreating into my own head, whether it's good or bad. It's usually pretty bad. But I need I don't seek out other people to recharge, but I think I gather something from human interaction that I would like to think I can do on my own, but I can't. That I mm-hmm. do need people, but I'm reluctant to admit how much like a meeting can actually really help me. I mean, a meeting can be awful and go poorly, but a meeting is like, oh, okay, I feel a little bit like more excited to go do the thing that we need to accomplish.
There are some creative geniuses who can sit in a room by themselves and come up with just an absolute layered, great concept.
And to be clear, we both are that.
No.
We just are that.
But what I love is just having the beginning of an idea and then just having a couple other people pile onto it. And then you just sort of get that rich layered, you know, whether it be a story or a feature idea or whatever. And it's also just little by little, just affirmation. It's just like, mm-hmm. oh, okay. So it was a good idea to begin with. And this just makes it a little bit better. This makes it a little bit better. All right, cool. And so it's just, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of teamwork that's been missing. I feel like I've been bitching this whole entire
podcast. No, we both have. This is a review I've gotten before where everyone's like, you're going to get out of this and stop being so sad. And I'm like, no, I'm not sad. I'm talking about the sadness so we can all kind of process it. And you guys can learn from like my sadness. So you don't have to feel the sadness. Yeah. I'm just letting you guys know what it feels like so that you can like tourist my depression. You can stop by, take a look at it, be like, sounds awful. I should learn the lessons that she's trying to learn, and then never spend any time here. But my favorite thing in a meeting is when somebody's like, this is a bad idea, but I half have it and it's haunting me. So I'm going to toss it out there. And then somebody else hears it and is like, I know exactly where you're going and you're actually trying to go over here. And then they're like, yes, I love that. And what if we did this? And then you all of a sudden are rolling down a hill and you're both like, I knew I wasn't crazy to think this was a good idea. Like, that's the best feeling. I haven't felt it in a year and a half. And that's lowballing it. It might have been longer than that. It's just been a lot of
I've been in South Florida my entire ESPN existence since 2012, and well, now there's definitely nobody else but here.
I was gonna say there you lost a huge chunk of,
but even that was their own entity. They were their own show. Like, I was a part of it or whatever, but it wasn't like I wasn't in their meetings. They weren't like talking to me about stuff that I wanted to do. So it's like I'm on an island over here, and this isn't like a knock on the whole experience or the whole, you know, just way to going about this. But, you know, if you're not in the offices, you're just kind of out of sight, out of mind. And like, unless you force your way into that, like, you're just not going to get that interaction. And so there's been a lot of, or very little of that throughout the course of my ESPN career. So I've gotten kind of used to it, but I was actually thinking about this the other day. I was like, I was a beat writer. That's a lonely ass job. Like, it's you're literally around, like, you're on the road, you're around the people that you know, but those people that you know also happen to be like your daily competition. So it's like, ooh, I like you, but I can't say too much. You know, it's just a weird existence that whole time. But yeah, I think I totally lost track of where I was going there.
You're just talking about being alone in your job, in the sense that you've always kind of been separate. You're in Miami. It happens in New York too. We're on an island. Not being in Bristol, to be very specific about our specific company that we work for, not being where it is based, it's not like a, you're not important, but it does make it, it puts like a line of, it's more difficult to be involved in stuff. People are running into each other at lunch in the cafeteria and you just aren't, because you're not there. So you're not having those like kismet little moments where you bump into each other and something great comes out of it. You're not bumping into as many people. So it's a lot harder to feel, you know, familial in this situation, which is why,
you know,
No, go ahead.
What I was going to mention earlier, because we were talking about messaging and like how gullible people can be and how can they take in this all this information. Like when we talk about like women's sports and WNBA and like sort of creating an equality there, we, and I'm being literal here, we have a lot more influence on that over the course of time than I think we even recognize, because like, all we really have to do is set the table for how people or why people want or should watch it. And then they'll go in with that mindset. So it's like, let's just say we're going player A versus player B in the WNBA. And we just create this narrative. It's just like, these two hate each other. It comes, you know, it's perfectly clear when they're on the court. Like there's this at stake, that at stake, da, da, da. Like, go watch this. Trust me. Like, you're going to get enough people to do that, that over the course of time, like, you're just creating an interest level there. And then after, I don't know how many years, 10, 20 years, you'll realize, oh, that's just part of what I like. It's just like with the women's national soccer team. Like, basically since the mid to early 90s, like, they only came about every once in a while. So it wasn't a lot of heavy lifting to really push them. But when we did, we watched. We watched because of the flag, but we watched. And it's like, holy shit, it's entertaining. Like, they're good. They're winning. Man, next thing you know, we are, you know, decades later, and we're holding them up as like the shining beacon of like what it is for sports in this country. And we'll watch them in their major competitions. We can do that with these other women's sports 100%. Like, I'm a huge women's volleyball fan. Like, absolute love women's indoor volleyball. It's probably my favorite sport.
I haven't watched it in so long, but I did enjoy it when my friends played it in high school.
It's so much fun to watch. But like, if you just sort of build a you know, a story around it, or build just any sort of reason to go to watch it, then you'll get the athleticism, you'll understand, because that, you know, the sport part is the easy part to understand. You're watching, it's like, oh, it's impressive what they do. But just getting them in front of a TV, I think, like, there are some sports that maybe were under evolved a while back. Like, you know, women's basketball in the 70s was probably not the most fun sport to watch, but man, they've been at it for a good amount of time and it's dope right now. And so if we could just get people, and so I just wonder, like, if it's, how much, you know, us and like producers of TV shows and everything else just really push it, and but not like you're pushing it, not like saying, hey, I'm pushing something, and don't announce it. Don't say, hey, you might not like this, but just go ahead and include it and like talk about it some more. It's the same thing we did with the women's NCAA tournament. And I think it was successful in that it showed that that tournament was better and more, and got a lot of eyes on it.
Yeah.
And so I just wonder, like, if we were to think that way, and just go with what's interesting, or find what's interesting, instead of, you know, just sucking the life out of interesting of all the other stuff that we, you know, enjoy, the major sports, the men's sports. Maybe, you know, 20, 30 years down the line, we are looking at WNBA, you know, multi-million dollar, you know, eight figure contracts and stuff, and, you know, primetime television slots. But hey,
I mean, we live in a world where like media is so segmented that there's so many TV shows. You can have one that you're obsessed with that someone else has never even heard of before. And yet when we talk about women's sports, and people are like, well, they don't draw the audience. And it's like, well, half of that is because it doesn't get the promotion. It doesn't get talked about the same way. Most of the times that we talk about women's sports, it's about a controversy in women's sports that usually pertains to whether or not the women should be allowed to play the sports. It's not usually about a controversy between two players or a trade or some sort of crazy drama that you guys don't even know is going on. That's not the kind of coverage that it gets. It gets the, like, they should women be kneeling for the flag? And it's like, ay, 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 what are we doing? But it's that way of talking about it and discussing it like it's any other sport that would get people to just be like, they like it or they don't. And if you don't like it, cool, shut up about it. Go watch Breaking Bad. Like, I don't know. There's plenty of other places.
It's crazy how bad we are at it in this country. When you think of like the MLS, like, they're like,
they would kill you for saying the MLS, by the way. That's their press, their press guy. I don't know if he still works there, but I remember being warned to never say the MLS in front of him, because he would get very upset. And I was like, that's not a good attitude for a press guy to have.
I was warned about that when I covered Miami Fusion in MLS years and years ago. But actually right there. I started to say something else and then said MLS. So whatever, they're fine.
Yeah, it's fine. He's, can't get too mad. Sorry is what we're saying. Is he's very sorry.
MLS on your podcast. They should be excited. But even their growth, like so much of that was dependent on, hey, look at this foreign guy, this international guy that we're bringing over, and we're bringing all of his identity and his storylines and his skill, and we're just going to piggyback off of that, and hopefully, like, our guys will catch your attention too. Like, no, like, go ahead and just push what it is that you want out
yes.
there.
Yes. What do you want to be known for? What do you want? What's the thing that makes you love the sport? Because mm-hmm. You can get people to look over in your direction in any number of ways. But once they're looking in your direction, what do you want them to see? Talk about that. Push that, because people are going to come in the door because of the story about the flag with women's soccer, or because of the foreign player coming over to MLS. That's going to bring them into your party. But then you can't just not have anything going on in your party, because those people are going to go. And yeah, there's going to be some people who are just looking for the type of controversy that you don't want to have all the time. Let those people leave. You don't need people you don't like at your party. But once you've got people at the party, give them something. Tell them what it is. Hook them. Make them stay. I'm using the party analogy now. I'm like, I'd want to leave at some point. I would want somebody to let me leave. But it's just like, make sure you've got something. I feel like so many people want to be looked at. Like, nobody's ready to be seen. It's like, what is it that you want to show us? And I think that, you know, we can all do a better job with women's sports of talking about that kind of stuff. The problem for me, and this is me making excuses, but it's kind of got validity to it, is that I'm kind of a secondary or almost like third layer of coverage. I've said this when I came to ESPN. I'm like, the reason I'm so excited is because the best in the business of like reporting sports are here, which means I have so much to play with, because I don't report sports. Right. I'm not watching every basketball game and breaking it down, but I can take those storylines and be like, ooh, let's look at them this way, a way that sports doesn't like to usually look at things. Is there anything here? Is this funny? But if there's no, if we're not talking about women's sports the way we're talking about men's sports, there's less for me to, any women's soccer fan, any NWSL fan knows so much more about that league than I do at the moment. It just mm-hmm. is the case, because they are rabid fans that seek out information, that love it, which is great for that league, and they hopefully will turn that into a bigger audience. But I feel this guilt of like, I want to talk about the drama, but I don't, nobody else is talking about it at all, so it's very difficult, because then you become a podcast about a very niche thing, which is like, no, I want to be the mainstream thing talking about.
This is the chipping away conversation again, right? Yeah. Because like, what do we just, like, we just had a Liz Cambage conversation because, you know, an opposing coach called her, you know, 300 pounds, which, by the way, the opposing coach, being a gay man who has worked in women's sports his whole life, should have known way better than that. Like, that was probably his biggest screw up of his life. But anyway, we talked about her in
also,
that.
Also, I'd pay money to look like Liz Cambage, but keep going. Right?
And then, like, the next thing I see about her is, you know, just that little gif of her smiling while she's backing somebody down and scoring so easily that she's like, ha, ha, ha. And I'm like, okay, it's a good direction. We're yeah. actually watching her play basketball now, not talking about her physique, not saying, oh, go check out her Instagram, she looks amazing. Like, we're actually showing a clip of her playing basketball. If we could expand that a little bit more, like, maybe she laughs at people the entire game and you're just like, wow, you know what? That'd be pretty fun to watch if, you know, I get to watch this person dominate and she's like laughing at the opponents off the court. Like, that's pretty. So we're getting closer. Like, we're yes. finding reasons to tune into the game. But it's small.
But it's slow.
It's like, it's just got to be one of those things where, again, 20 years from now, you didn't even notice like when the big turn came. You're just like, oh, well, WNBA is part of my life now. I don't know when that happened, but I'm better for it.
Yeah. You're right. Everything is progress, and progress is slow. And everything that, all the loud stuff happening on the way to progress feels like it happens really fast and loud, and all the progress is like quiet and calm. And so it can feel like you can get caught up in all the crazy stuff, but I
progress,
think
by the way,
going in
bar
the
in Chicago.
What?
And the reason progress is a gay bar in Chicago. And the reason I bring
it.
That up.
That sounds like whatever is a, love is a four letter word. You're like, progress yeah. is a gay bar in Chicago.
I was trying to figure out a way to change the conversation. I'm just like, oh, why am I thinking of progress? Oh yeah, that's the bar in Chicago. We used to have one here, but they closed down. But yeah, I'm actually playing in a flag football tournament in Chicago. And when you talk about like a slow buildup, or it's, whew, man, being 40 in your mid-40s, or wow, I'm a mid-40s guy now. Being in your mid-40s and like trying to build your body up to play in like a flat.
Shut up, Izzy. You're shirtless on TV all the time. I haven't worked out in years. I have not picked up a weight in years. Like, I'm starting to dread. I'm like, I need to start working out, because now we're getting to the point where like it's just going to start shutting down. So you, with your muscles popping out of your t-shirt, shut your mouth.
True story. I was at a Memorial Day thing. Bunch of people I didn't know. It was Anthony's friends' friends, and the two times that Anthony had hung out with them, I was out of town, so I literally knew nobody in this place. And so, hanging out, whatever, a couple hours later, talked to a couple people, playing some cornhole, blah, blah, blah. And then, so I'm going to the restroom inside the house, and as I'm coming out, like, somebody asked me if I'm who I am, and I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, and then the guys are like, oh, wow, that's so crazy. We were just sitting there saying, like, and this is a true story. They were just sitting there saying, well, let's just wait till he takes his shirt off, because if he's ripped, we know it's Izzy. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, yeah. I have created this, like, monster. It's like the bane. Like, I go to – every time I think about not going to the gym, I'm just like, nope. Pictures are online, and literally the first thing
your intro picture for Highly Questionable is you with your shirt off. Mine is me as a child with a fake laser background that a producer put in. That.
I literally gave Charlie, our producer, other options. I gave him the fat me from high school picture posing like this in a suit, and he wouldn't give it to me. He just gives me that one. So it's just, yeah.
Because you've earned it. You have earned it, Izzy. You look like that. So be proud. Pride is a gay bar in Chicago. What's wrong? What happened?
Sorry, I just remembered I'm on Spain and Fitz tonight, and I thought I missed it.
Go.
No, I'm not. It's not for an hour.
Okay. Well, we can wrap it up anyway. I'm trying to see if there's anything else I was dying to ask you about, but you've been so honest, and it's been really, really nice to hear your story, and I hope this was, I know it sounded a little negative maybe at some points, but I hope this was felt fun and was good for you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I didn't cry once, and that's
I thought about it. There was one point where I thought about it, but I didn't. I held back. I'm strong. Izzy, where can people find you?
Real quick, when is this posting?
Tomorrow.
Okay. So I'll be in Denver on Friday night for the game 3 of the Suns and Nuggets. I'll be doing sidelines for that game.
Are the Nuggets going to win?
I hope so.
You're rooting for the Nuggets?
I'm not anti-Suns, but you know what? Let's talk about Jokic winning the MVP real quick, because it made me very happy. It was
Your face said it made you angry, and I was worried.
No, made me so happy. Like, I mean, speaking of crying, like I almost cried just watching him do his interview with the TNT guys the other night. As soon as Shaq said, hey, you winning for the big fellas, Jokic. And Jokic kind of like pointed in the air and like dropped his head. He was so proud of that. And like the things that he went through, like just being the antithesis of what we think of when we think of this amazing NBA athlete. I mean, he looks like, and I think Dan Le Batard probably stole this phrase first, but I remember thinking of it back in the years or over the years. He looks like a loaf of bread. He should not be winning the NBA MVP. And it just made me so happy to watch him do it. And then because his game is so unique too at that position, it's just like, I want to see how far this goes. Now, this isn't like anti-Chris Paul. I like Chris Paul. I want him to make an NBA Finals at some point in his career, so it's not like this
the thing that hangs over his head. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but with Jokic, I just want to see him go as far as possible. It makes me very sad that Jamal Murray's not on the team, because I'm pretty sure they'd be the final.
I know. It's such a bummer. It's just like, you're about to go do it, and they're still doing it, but it's just like, man, if they had him, if they had Murray, they would be really.
Yeah,
good. I mean, I live with a Nuggets fan, so.
Come on now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They could do it, but just fingers crossed. I don't know. We're not supposed to do that, especially because you're working the game. I'll cross my fingers.
All right.
How's that?
That's where I will be. Not cheering for anybody.
No, of course not.
Now, if it goes anything like my last game, you might not actually see my face, because what? I did a Grizzlies Jazz game 3 and never actually got on camera, oddly enough. You heard my voice a lot, but never in my face. It was weird.
Does that bug you when that happens, or does it not matter?
Oh, no. The only thing that bugs me is that I put on the makeup anyway. And then,
yeah, I was going to say the hair and makeup would bug me.
Well, I have to wear the mask, right? And so the mask with the makeup, and all I'm doing is smelling makeup in my mask, that part bugs me. So if I had to do that for 3 hours and didn't actually get on camera, it was a little, but you know, who the hell wants to look at me anyway?
You get used to the smell of makeup. That's just me giving you a bit of, if we have to go on wearing masks forever, that scent, you just get used to it. The way it feels on your skin and makes you feel absolutely disgusting, you get used to it.
Let me tell you how much I hate this, Katie. Like, I now have a regimen when it comes to like, all right. So I used to make fun of Mike Greenberg.
Because he had skincare?
Well, I'd see him in the makeup chair after a show, and he was leaned back like he was at a barbershop, you know, getting a shave, but it was just one of the makeup artists taking, you know, every little ounce of makeup off his face, like just Diva. Basically giving him a whole facial every single day. And I was just like, ha ha, look at that guy. And now I use, Katie, a pre-cleanse.
Okay. No way. So wait.
I do.
Walk me through the steps of your skincare routine. You use a pre-cleanse?
So it's only after I've used either sunscreen or makeup, right? So.
And you're using sunscreen every day, right? Because you're in Miami?
Whenever I'm spending more than 15 minutes in the sun, yes.
I was going to say, I use sunscreen every day and I haven't left my house in a year.
That's another smell just, I don't love.
Yeah, I hate it too.
Thing. Especially since I use like the mineral stuff. And so
yes, it's good. It doesn't smell. Oh. And it's not the same. I'll bleep this anyway so that I'm not actually endorsing anything. So you pre-cleanse.
So I basically got this one. And if you read the instructions, it's sure. It seems like it's just another soap before you use this one. But, you know, I take this stuff and I like put it everywhere on my face.
Okay.
And then, like, you take the water and you just sort of like emulsify it a little bit into this white liquid. And then I take this little gray little pad. I think it's plastic. It's got these little nubs on it. It feels really nice. And you just kind of rub it all over your face.
Okay.
And then you get all that off.
Yep.
And you're just like, all right, it feels super clean, but that was just the pre-cleanse.
So
I got regular cleanse, and you know, I just wash the face up really good, and then I got very careful around the under eyes because I mean, look, if we're just going to be totally honest here and we're keeping this all in, Chris Berman has been on TV long time in his life, and he is at a point where you know, he was on TV at a point where, you know, back in the day, they probably didn't say much to dudes about skincare. And like the under eye area is something that I'm very, very cognizant about because of Chris Berman. Shout out to the legend. And so I definitely like make sure it's all out of there, but I have to be very delicate with drying it. And then
watching him do this, listener, I just want you to know, is very rewarding. And I'm sorry that you're not getting that part of the experience.
Yeah. And then I just put on my moisturizer, and then I have the debate every single time. It's like, should I put the under eye stuff on, or am I putting it on too much?
Now, what's the under eye stuff? Is it a cream? Is it one of those ones that has caffeine in it to keep it from getting?
No, it's just a cream. It's a little repair cream. It's for the fine lines and whatnot. I did the old caffeine little thing one time. You know, the little roll on.
Yeah.
Thing, but I don't really have the. I mean, I don't know.
You don't have bags. I can tell you right now.
So I don't necessarily need that, but basically this is another reason why it sucks not to be able to go in studio, because I would just get all this advice from makeup.
Yes, like, I miss it
tell me
so
what to
much.
Use. I'll be more than happy to do it.
So
now I'm just like, my eyes, like I pay attention to every little detail and be like, is that new? What's going on there? Is that noticeable?
Izzy, I have a wrinkle that I just started noticing. And that, you know, I've got crow's feet and I've got the smile lines, but I'm always like, whatever. I have a wrinkle on the top of my lip, like on my upper, right above my upper lip. And I'm like, that's an old lady wrinkle. Nobody gets a random wrinkle in the middle of their upper lip except an old lady. I'm getting an old lady.
34 when I noticed my first one. Like the first one where I'm just like, oh, that's a wrinkle.
That's not just like, oh, you've lived, you've laughed, you've loved. It's like, no, you are getting old. You have an old lady face. It sucks. But I can't even get my boyfriend to put lotion on his face. He's like, do I use hand lotion? I said, no, you don't use hand lotion. You have to get specific face moisturizer. And the thing I said to him that made it click, but he still doesn't do it, but at least it was the first step, is I was like, you get one skin. You're not putting on moisturizer for now. You're putting it on for then. You're making your skin more elastic so that as it stretches out, it's nicer about it.
So my Anthony has a theory on, or he had a theory on this. I've gotten him past this. He used to think that the only reason you need to moisturize when you're an adult is because you moisturized when you were younger. And
oh my God, I've heard this.
Got used to it, and I'm just.
I dated a guy who didn't use shampoo because he said the only reason you need shampoo is because you've been using your shampoo your whole life.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's absolutely ridiculous. And so I've gotten him past that. So he definitely uses some, you know, facial moisturizer stuff. But the thing I'm proudest of. Is, you know, I'm big on like all sorts of hygiene, but dental hygiene, right? Mm. point, because when I was younger, I did not take great care of my teeth. And I remember, I think I was 19 or 20. I know I was still in college. I went to the dentist and they're just like, yep, this is early stages of gingivitis. And I'm like, what the f-? That's that scary thing they say on the Listerine commercial, all the time, gingivitis. And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to take care. And I flossed all the time. And so I got him into like a flossing routine with the little sticks, right? Because that's the easiest way.
For
those who are lazy about this. And so he went like, so he's been a flosser now, right? So he went about a week with like some questionable like dental hygiene, and then like, you know, flossed again. And he was like, babe, I was flossing the other day after not flossing for a while, and it did not smell good. And I was like, yeah,
hey.
And he goes, I can't believe I didn't floss all those years.
Oh,
and
my God.
Yeah, one thing.
We did it. We did it. It's also funny, once you start flossing, you're like, oh, you don't bleed every time. It's like, yeah, oh, yeah, you're only bleeding because you were never doing it. No, your gums were like, let us out.
Do your hands wash when you bleed them? No?
Yeah.
Okay. Teeth shouldn't either. Your gums shouldn't either.
Exactly. Well, now I think we've covered everything from women's sports to trans rights to dental hygiene. So Izzy,
foot hygiene or feet care.
We can't talk about feet. No? I can't even, that's how it is on the internet for a woman. I can't even talk about having feet without it ruining my week. So I apologize, but you'll have to do that with a man. It's just not for me. Thank you so much for doing this. It was so nice to chat with you. I'm so glad that my listeners now know you and can trust you, and hopefully you'll see them saying nice things next time you're back on Twitter, because they tend to do that.
I was going to make a joke about me preferring to do a lot of things with men, but hey.
Hey!
Trust me, and they don't need you.
Hey-o! All right, Izzy Gutierrez, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, I'm hitting record now. Izzy just left. I forgot. Here's what happened, because I know I told you guys I was going to start just flowing right out of the interview into the rest of the podcast. I forgot to hit record on my local record for the entirety of that. So if the audio on that podcast wasn't the best one ever, don't blame Travis. Blame me. You were going to do that anyway. It was my fault, and I'm sorry, but it was such a good conversation that I think it'll be fine, and you guys will get through it. We're doing this from our houses. And I'd love it to be better. And I think in the future it will be better. But while it's not great, I'm going to, you know, get better at doing the actual job so that one day you can have a great podcast that's entertaining and that actually sounds good in your ears. But until then, you have this podcast, which is brought to you, look at that, by Flame Bearers. It's a podcast. So this is a podcast you're listening to, telling you about a podcast that you should listen to, and it's called Flame Bearers, because Flame Bearers brought you this podcast, but they also bring you their own podcast. It champions the women as the cops are driving by. That's me, not you. It champions the women seeking to compete in the 2021 Tokyo Summer Olympics and Paralympics. It shares their incredible, often unheard stories as they light the way for women around the world. It's kind of what Izzy and I were just talking about. Celebrate women athletes who don't receive the media attention they deserve, which is problematic because representation matters, which is also something essentially that Izzy and I were just talking about. A lack of representation makes it near impossible for younger girls to see their future selves in someone who doesn't exist today. So we want to show them those girls, show them they can grow up to be those women, and empower them to do things that the world spends a lot of time empowering other people to do. We all need hope and inspiration now more than ever. Learn lessons in grit and ambition from these elite athletes. Listen to Flame Bearers on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Oh man, Izzy was great. And I hope you guys learned something from his story. Listening to him talk about, you know, coming out and being gay and working in sports was fascinating to me. And I hope that it was also helpful to you. And as always, be kind to our guests. They are open and honest with you because I think they respect and value you. And so, you know, we're all open to criticisms, but just be nice. I don't know. I feel like I give this speech every week. I don't think you're not going to be nice. And now I'm just getting up in my own head. Should I end the podcast? Good idea. Shout out to, that's it for this week's second edition of Sports is the first thing I'm supposed to say. Shout out to Flame Bearers. Also, check out First Take Her Take, a podcast hosted by Charlie Kimberly, their new co-host, Elle, who you may know. And you may know her real name, from the 6 o'clock Sports Center. Why does it say Elle Duncan from the 6 o'clock Sports Center? Like, people don't know who Elle Duncan is. Anyway, what they do is they spill the tea on their lives while also discussing the hottest stories in sports and pop culture. It's called First Take, Her Take. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Download it. It's awesome. Support those women. They're great. Big thanks to you guys also for listening now and then maybe a second time. Do I usually tell you guys to listen twice when it's a interview. It's been so long since I've pulled one of these off. If you don't want to listen twice, you can just listen once, but leave a nice review wherever you're listening to the podcast, which we read. Travis reads, and we love them. And before I even look at the review that Travis posted in this doc, I'm looking away from it right now. You just have to trust me. Let's take bets. Do you think it mentions Travis's name? Because there's been a tendency that he kind of pulls the ones that mention him, and I just want to see if we all noticed it. Let's see if I was right. If it's the run... Oh, this is a review from Hayes XIV, which in Roman numerals is, 14... I think. If it's the rundown of sports and sports adjacent topics or the weekly big talk with a friend, associate, coworker, sports is a highlight of my podcasting week. Katie and the union make me wish for an even longer commute to work with each other. And there it is, folks. I'm the asshole. It doesn't mention Travis at all. Travis, if you're listening, which I know you are because you edit this, you win this one, buddy. 1-0. Lastly, don't forget that you can always leave us a voice message on our voicemail inbox. That number is 860-506-5571. Say goodbye, Izzy. Bye. Bye. I love you. I mean it.